body is still paraffin with the ladies' working dog group. Are you feeling stuck with your gun dog training? Trust me, you're not alone, and that's exactly why you need to be here. Every week, we're bringing you the best tips and hacks to make training your gun dog easy peasy. We'll keep it straightforward, no fuss, just actionable guidance that you can put straight to use. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of Found It Fetch It. This week, we are going to be talking to Angela Charlton. That name might not mean a lot to you right now, but by the end of this podcast, you'll know all about her and why you'll want to be working with her. So, Angela, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, on this Monday morning.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Before we go into why we're doing this podcast, tell us a bit about how you began your sort of journey as a wildlife artist. What sparked your interest in like being outdoors and around wildlife?
Right, so I guess it all started with my father dangling me off a piece of rope off a cliff. I think he called it climbing at the time, and I was going to grow into my boots. So being in the outdoors is at the heart of who I am, really. And so I used to do a lot of outdoor sports. And I hurt my ankle once, and I couldn't go out and play hockey because I used to play a lot of hockey. And so I started drawing and illustrating and realised that I wasn't too bad at it. And then that led to me going to Dovey College of Art, which was one of the few places in the country that did pure wildlife art. And I was there for 4 years, absolutely loved it. Again, most of my time was outside, sat on in Larn. I remember being in Larn, illustrating the waders and really getting close to nature. But when you sit there and you're watching nature, you start to understand it more, because obviously it takes hours to sort of capture some of the images that you want to capture. So that's what started my sort of career off. And as a wildlife artist, my first job was with the Heritage Coast here in Ibridgend, and I illustrated for a lot of their interpretation boards and that kind of thing. And then I went on to, I won't remember everywhere I went, but as I progressed, I did some work for the RSPB Wildlife Trust. I then noticed that I was talking more about what I was looking at and explaining to people what they were seeing. So I moved into environmental education, a little bit by accident, as you do, and then community engagement in the outdoors, and have had some amazing jobs. I've been a ranger in country parks. I was a very first female ranger for the Forestry Commission, and I'll never forget my first experience with what used to be, in the olden days, would have been their trapper. And I was in a piece of woodland in the Gower, and I could hear some shooting, and I thought, oh God, what is that? And they said, oh, don't worry about it. It's just John dealing with the issue of the fox or something. Oh, wow. Okay, then. that's interesting. So I was sort of, learning from people around me as well. So, went on to work with communities, to engage communities in the outdoors, which is very much what I do now, but across the whole of Wales.
So whilst you're chatting with me, Angela, I can see behind you a fabulous image of a working dog. When did working dogs become part of your life?
So I've sort of dad shot when I was very young. So dogs have always been around, and then he sort of travelled a lot of the world. And I would say over 20 years ago, my father was field trialling and judging in Europe, and obviously in this country as well. And I was always around the dogs. They weren't with me then, because obviously working full time, I couldn't keep the dogs with me. But he absolutely ensured I went on all the training days that he ran. And we used to go up to North Wales and sort of train groups there and in Cheshire. And on the way up, we'd talk about like what we think the group might want to learn and what we would ask. He was very good at planning and make sure he's quite methodical, so everyone got what they wanted out of it. And of course, picking up's my passion, really. I just like the dogs working. That's my absolute. I just can't wait for the season to start and get out. So, of course, Dad introduced me to that, and he made sure he did that before he passed, actually. He made sure, I noticed all of a sudden he was pushing me off into the distance to go and work the dogs, and And as it happened, then there came a point when it was me there, and I can imagine where my dad was. So yes, that's so I've been around dogs, and puppies particularly was my father's biggest passion. So watching him train very young dogs was amazing. Like I say, that was his favourite thing, watching young dogs come on, and I learned a lot from him, a huge amount about how dogs react, how they think and how to keep them interested and that sort of thing. Obviously, he was super trainer. I'm not sure I'm a super trainer, but my dog does what I want it to when I want it to on most occasions, but not all, as some of your listeners may also recognize. So yeah, so lining a dog up, line and spine, all the wind is your friend, all the expressions my dad used to use to help people, sort of stuck with me.
That's wonderful. And like for me, my dad was pivotal in bringing in me into this, as it seems it was for you. And I think it's always it's almost like a passing down of the baton a little bit to continue a love for country sport and being in the environment. Do you draw your dogs? Were dogs part of your drawing right at the beginning?
Yes, yeah, so I have done some. I was just looking around, actually. No, it's a fox I've got up on the other side that I did recently. So I have done a few of my dad's dogs some years ago. I did a few illustrations of those, but also hares. Hares are my favourite, as are fox. Obviously, clearly pheasant. I do quite close up detail of birds, particularly with soft backgrounds. And it does help being actually out watching them to understand them. So woodcock, there's been a lot of woodcock around this year, actually. So yes, I would illustrate my dogs, but clearly I work full time at the moment, so time's quite tight.
So tell us a little bit about your role now. You're the director for Ramblers Wales. I can sort of see as we're talking how that's happened, but do you feel that all these different roles has influenced getting to where you are now?
Yeah, I think so. It's been obviously that passion for the outdoors and for people being able to access nature and have the experiences that I had is really huge. So I'll tell you a very short story, the one thing that really says it all for me. So I was working with a group of people from Llanelli. They were youngsters who were coming off drug and alcohol misuse, not used to really using the outdoors in the way that we would. And on a hot summer, one of the young women was coming up Penavan with me, and not quite appropriately clothed, but that was okay. And she had slash marks on her arm, which is not something I'm used to. But when we got to the top of Et Penavan, she said she didn't realise she could get a high without taking drugs. So that for me sort of said it all. That's what we feel when we're out in the outdoors, you get a high. So my work as Director of Wales is very much lobbying Welsh Government to make sure that the PATH network is kept open. I have several projects across Wales working with communities to help them. We train and we lead them on walks to open up the PATH network and where there are blockages or problems and issues. So it just seemed like a natural move from being a ranger on the ground to now being a little bit more strategic about how we sort of make changes and improve the access.
So do you think that, like, obviously you advocate for like responsible access to the outdoors? How do you sort of see that advocacy aligning with in the context of of shooting and sports? Because there is an ill-informed public opinion. How do you go about addressing that in your role today?
Yeah, so I never hide my gun dog. So my gun dog, Bracken, who's 5 and snoring his head off right now, will be going out for a meeting soon, because I do lots of walking and talking meetings. So all the ministers that I meet get to meet my dog, and they know he's a gun dog and he's a working dog, and I'll talk to them about it as well, which is what I do. Interestingly, I don't know if you've heard, but the new minister that's taken on that role, for Rural Affairs and Access, is Hugh Iranca-Davies, who's also Vice President for Ramblers. So I will be talking more about shoots. So it's about behaviour as well, and that understanding. I have no problem. If people ask me what my dog does, I will explain to them what he does. And on the whole, they're really interested and fascinated. Some, of course, they don't get it, and I'm happy with that. I will do my best to change that view. Working with the RSPB, I had some of my colleagues asking if they could have pheasants during the season. So some of them also got that sort of how that world worked. So yeah, no, I have no problem.
I do think there is a misunderstanding of how shooting supports sustainability within the countryside. Could you offer some advice to our members on how they can balance their passion for working dogs with like this responsible ownership and stewardship of the natural environment?
Yeah, so I think if you look into any of the scientific research that Basque and others do, quite often the environment is really well managed, not just for the pheasant, but it actually, because you have to have the undercover, you'll get a lot of songbirds as well. So when you're managing a sort of a biodiverse setting, the outcomes are can be far more than managing for a particular bird, for example, which I know some organisations do. They put a lot of money into saving a particular species, but sometimes that's not looking at the whole pattern, the whole biodiversity that has to work together. So I think we have to bear that in mind. You know, when you go on a shoot, you have a look around of the different diverse birds that you will see there. That's my experience and some of the reading that I have. And also, I think my passion also is that anything that's shot should be eaten and used as well as possible. So I take the pheasant home and we freeze it, and every Christmas we make lots of pies, make lots of food out of the pheasant that we have during that season. I do not support any burying of carcasses or pheasants that have been shot. I just think that's horrendous, and I do think guns need to be educated, to be honest. You know, when you shoot that bird, you need to know where it's going. And interestingly, this year someone did ask me what happens. A gun did ask me, and I was able to explain, well, these will get vacuum packed, and you're able to take those with you, and then some of the beaters and pickers up are able to take them, and we know that some then will go on to communities for food. And we're hearing much more about recipes that use game, and I think we need a lot more of that as well. A lot more of that. You see it at game fairs, and yeah.
We work strongly with Eat Wild, which were the British Game Assurance. But I think you're absolutely right. You know, if you have this mentality that if you were part of the hunting, you are part of the eating, or even if you are, you know, because we have members who are vegan and vegetarian, even if you're not that part, you make sure it ends up in the hands of somebody who will use it for something. I think in my mind, definitely. I can sleep well with that because I know it was a circle of life and not just a case of what people perceive. And again, this goes back to perceptions that it was just killed for sport.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, it's good food, it's healthy food. You know, you hear of this chicken farming, of which there is a lot, unfortunately, across Wales. You know, the quality of life those birds have, and you know, the quality of the meat that they produce, you could argue that's not great. That's really not great.
So, talk to us a little bit more because you have been nominated for the Basque Board. And for somebody who's listening who's like, what's Basque? It's the British Association for Shooting and Conservation. Tell us, you know, how you've ended up being nominated for that and what you want to achieve in that role.
Yeah, so I think I had my arm firmly broken on this one. So I bumped into, I've been a member of Basque for many years, and you know, I support them, particularly for a lot of the science that they do. So yeah, I bumped into one of the Basque chair at a Labour conference, which is where I happen to be at for Ramblers. And my colleague had mentioned that, oh, my director here, she has a gun dog and she shoots and this, that, and the other. And so they sort of brought me into the Wales committee a bit. And then last year I became a wildfowler for the first time, which is very exciting. So down on Morlaith Valley, and got talking to them, and I just automatically slip into politics. and find out who's influencing who, where the gaps are, what we can be doing together, which again is something I really enjoy, and obviously working with the ministers as I do. So yeah, I was encouraged by the Chair of Wales to put myself forward, and was nominated by some of my colleagues, I guess you call them, so wildfowlers, and actually one of my picking up pals, and they're quite keen, I think, for me to use my voice where I can because I'm not afraid to, and but also very measured. I need to know what the science is if I'm going to stand up there and sort of shout it out. I need to have the experience as well on the ground. So I listened a lot. So when we had that big piece consultation go through Welsh Government recently, a lot of beaters, pickers up were saying, oh, I'm not going to bother to sign it. I'm not. So I actively made sure everybody that could sign it would, because it was counting, it was numbers that were needed, not a group of people. So, don't leave it up to other people because you will lose this sport that you love. When the guys come together every winter and they come to pick up and beat, that's a big family there. That's 3, 4 months of the year where you've got a really tight family out in the outdoors supporting each other, that will go. And you working your dogs, which we all love, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. I don't know if you saw that David Attenborough piece recently that came out about dogs. I think it was out on Facebook this week and I retweeted it out, sort of questioning how people don't work their dogs now and the detriment to the dog. So I thought, wow, that's really interesting coming from David Attenborough. And it did mention the retriever does need to swim and retrieve duck. So that's happy days for me.
I think as well, like what you just said there is that not a lack of education, because I think the education is there. I think it's just not getting sometimes to the right places. Like, for example, we see just general problems with most dogs now, and this lack of understanding that your dog is a predator and will behave certain ways from their own heredity, from their genetics, and I think that, like, it's almost like that disassociation that milk comes from cows. It's getting back in touch with the fact that you need to look at the past to understand the present a little bit.
Totally. Yeah, couldn't agree more.
So now that you're nominated, when we first chatted, I think you said to me that you are or will be potentially the first female on the board. Is that correct?
I think I'm the only one of, I think, four that are being put forward for two places. I think it's
Right.
four or five. I'm the only female that could be elected. And I think with International Women's Day, that's why I contacted you. I thought this would be a great place to flag this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, because we have a huge following within the UK, no doubt, but also globally. And I think sometimes the conversations we have on here help other areas to think, well, what could I do, or what could I be part of in my local area where these conversations are going on? So, are there any women on the actual board itself at the moment?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there is. I'm sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, I can certainly investigate that, because that was fascinating to me, was like, how do we bring a female perspective to, again, from a political, from a policy position, how do we bring a female perspective to sports, to how we put together legislation? Because I don't think a lot of people expect women still to be part of this community.
No, and I couldn't agree more, which is why in the end I said yes, I would put myself forward. So when I talk to them in politics and I talk to them about my dog because he's always with me and what he does, they are quite surprised and they'll listen because it's different coming from a woman. If a woman's saying, yeah, this is fine because it works and this is, it's ethical, it's sustainable, it's different when it's coming from, what you're imagining. I don't know what words to use, but when you've got the traditional male, maybe the camouflage and all of that, it comes with perceptions, doesn't it? And people don't really expect me to say some of the things that I do.
I suppose as well, like if you look at perceptions and stereotypes, if you were to read your CV where you say RSPB, Ramblers Wales, to then see running for Bath, That almost feels a little bit like an anomaly.
Yeah. So yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So I've always worked for conservation organisations, and usually with a view to engaging people in the environment to understand that world. But the two naturally go together for me. So when I'm out working my dog, I know the land is being managed, and it attracts quite a wealth of wildlife, a biodiverse wealth of wildlife, and then you're close with your dog and you're engaged with nature, and then you bring your food home. I mean, there's nothing more basic, I suppose, than that. So yeah, I have no problem. I was saying, when I worked with the RSPB years ago and the Wildlife Trust, again, I never hide what I do, and they got to hear more about what I do and how the dog works. They got interested in that. So yeah, it is interesting.
Suppose as well, though, we live in a culture where I certainly don't hide the fact that I work my gun dogs, or what they were bred for, what they are trained for. But a lot of our ladies, I suppose, understandably, are nervous to have those conversations for how it's accepted by others. But I think, like you just said, the lack of us having those conversations, it doesn't help the problem, does it?
So I was coming back from a shoot this season and popped into the supermarket, and I still had all my gear on because I didn't have a chance to change. So there was a few feathers and stuff stuck to me, and someone asked me what I'd been doing. So I explained, and they were fascinated. They were absolutely fascinated. I don't know if it was because I was really comfortable talking about it. I had no, and they go, "Oh, really? So what happens?" So the spaniels do that, and then the labs do that, and so they were asking questions, and other people then were starting to listen. But you can't hide it. If hiding it is the worst thing, we will lose the sport if we're not careful. I think we've got to be sensitive to people. If someone wants to step to you and ask you the question, stand up, be strong, and respond. And part of your passion as well will come through, which I think helps. If you're enthusiastic and passionate, people like to be part of a passion, don't they? Then rebel against that, I suppose.
I think as well, though, like I've had this conversation many times with our members and with our community, is the understanding, even if you do not take part in shooting in any way, if we were to lose it, not only does that affect our natural environment, things like hedgerows, woodlands, etc., but it also affects our dogs because our dogs are so good because they have been bred to be this good. If we take the reason for them to be this good away, that will understandably and without doubt influence the ability, the capability of our dogs over the years.
Yeah, they'll change. I mean, I cannot imagine having a dog that didn't work. I just couldn't. I wouldn't be able to cope. My dog needs that stimulation. That's what he's been bred for. He's fit. I'm sure your members will recognize this and say, "Wow, you're for a Labrador, that's quite a slim dog." And you go, "No, this is normal. This is a normal, healthy, working animal." And yeah, if we move too far away from that, are we going to have big, fat, lazy dogs, which is what Attenborough was sort of saying, really? We move them into this really unhealthy world, which is the same as people, isn't it? We were built to be active and do, and yeah, our natural instincts also will kick in when we're out with the dog. Working together is really important for the person and the dog.
I think that, I know there's certain breeds that will not respond in the same way as our working dogs do. But I think there's something amazing for any dog to work at any sport with their owner because that connection, when it's going right, they, like you said, like that high, there is nothing like it.
No, and I've been out with my dad when he's been at field trials, and he was at the championships a couple of times, which was great. And watching that perfect connection is just really, really special. And when you meet somebody who's not used to that, they think, "Wow, your dog's amazing." You just think, "No, he's just being a dog," which is what they do. They can listen, if you put the time and effort into training them from that young age, which they love that. They're thinking animals at the end of the day. So yeah.
So hopefully you will get one of the two places available on the Basque board. Once you're in place, what are your hopes going forward?
Well, I think as you've said, actually, Joe, quite rightly, is how do we have these conversations? How do we have more of these conversations with people who aren't currently connected, and then build that up, build a wave of having the conversation. And I know in some instances, you know, getting some of the ministers out, those that make the decisions, out on some of the shoots, out with people who are training their dogs to start with, maybe, so they can see how that works, and then, you know, slowly seeing that in action. Yeah, I think I'm really keen to do that. I'm also really keen to start looking, if we can, at those shoots that don't have the best practice. And what can we do about that? Is it because they don't have the equipment to maybe deal with the birds so that they're defeathered and rested and all the rest of it? Is there something we could do to help through a grant or whatever that is, but make it easy for those gamekeepers to be sustainable as well, and highlight those that are, so more people can see good practice? I know I've seen some really good practice where actually the butcher comes up at the end of the shoot and takes them away, and food is prepared, whether that's burgers or otherwise. So yeah.
And with things like, the Countryside Food Trust, where they are using that, using the meter to feed the homeless, etc. I think we have an obligation to the bird to ensure it didn't die in vain.
Yeah. So that's respect for the game, isn't it? Total respect for the game, even when it's just been shot, that it's hung properly, it's not just left on the floor and all the rest of it. But yeah, you know, so many people, I mean, particularly at this time when money is so tight, and you know, people are homeless, and there's food there. You know, we should be sharing that. We should be sharing that food, and move away from the people that think it's people are shooting for fun. And again, for me, there's education with some guns. Some are brilliant, but I think we could do better, maybe having a better code of conduct, code of practice, something. But it takes all of us to make the change, I think.
And absolutely, and stuff like this, this conversation, it informs and educates in a, in a non-threatening way. And people go, okay, well, I hadn't thought about that, or I hadn't thought about that. And it needs lots and lots of those conversations. And I also think, like you said, there needs to be some sort of like code of conduct, code of behavior, but also look at the shoots where they are mass shooting. And if you are going to be responsible for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of birds, being dispatched, they need without doubt to be going somewhere.
Yes, yeah, and that Joe is what I will be pushing for, and I think that was in my statement actually to Bath when I put myself forward as one of the reasons that I was prepared to get involved and to sort of help and speak out, try and take people with us.
Absolutely. Well, for those people who are listening who are Bath members, how would they be able to vote for you? What is the process?
So if you go to Basque Online, if you just go straight to their website, it will have the elections up, and you can simply go in, click, and vote. I'm the female one.
You'll be easy to find.
Female
Well, to finish what has been an amazing podcast, and we're absolutely appreciative of your time and your knowledge, let's just have some sort of fun questions to sort of wrap up. So, what is your favorite breed to work with?
So obviously it has to be the Labrador Retriever, because that's what I know, and yeah, they're so responsive. I did try a Spaniel once, and they were a little bit more crazy, so I'll stick with the Labrador Retriever.
When my dad passed 4.5 years ago, I was left with his kennels, and basically there was all these dogs, and I was like, but what do I keep? What do I, what don't I keep? I can't control, I can't train all these myself. And I looked at the labs and I was like, oh, I'll keep my spaniels. And there are days now when I think, why didn't I pick the
Oh,
lab? And sort of like you love obviously picking up, but do you, if you could embark on sort of a dream day, where would you go? Where would you like to pick up with your dog, or what would you like to do with them?
where would I like to go? I suppose it's really strange to say this, but my dream day is where I already pick up, where I know everybody and we know each other and we don't have to say anything. We all know our spots within the woods and in the valleys. That is my, I just can't wait for the season. I can get up no problem 6 o'clock in the morning for shoots, but I when it comes to work, for some reason, it's a lot harder. But yeah, part of it is being with the people you know and trust, and you have great banter. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that and that camaraderie of you're all working towards a common goal together. And I suppose it's for me, like I don't go too much now without dad because I find it incredibly hard without dad there. But I think it's that whole thing of like there's no like office politics or none of that. It's almost you're all accepting of the common goal and you are happy to work towards it. It is a consensual thing, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and I think you are a team. You're a team at the end of the day, aren't you? And yeah, and I think watching other people's dogs work and how they sort of work them as well is fascinating and can be funny as well, myself included. But you can have a little bit of fun. But the dogs come home at the end of the day, and he's right in front of the fire. That's, he's happy. I'm happy. I've probably froze all day, but I'm really happy with that. And we might have some food in the freezer as well. So.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast episode. For all those listening, I hope you've enjoyed listening to Angela as much as I have. It's been a great interview. Angela, where can they find you? Obviously, they can find you on the Basque Elections, but where can they find you? Is there anywhere like Facebook or Instagram or somewhere where they can follow you and what you do?
Yeah, so yes, I have a Facebook account, which is Angela Charlton, and also Twitter. I think it's Morgan Rambler. I use the name of my old dog who sadly passed just before Christmas, but he was the last of my dad's dogs. So I'm on Twitter. I do a lot of my Rambler stuff through there. But yes, do drop me a line, do connect. And I hope everyone's able to feel comfortable to speak out.
Fabulous. Well, thank you all for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed. Please go along to Angela's social media and tell her how much you've appreciated this episode. And we hope to speak to you all next week.
Thank you, Joe.
That's it for today's episode. A massive thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to head over to the LWDG and sign up for our membership. Get access to expert-led training, a wonderfully supportive community, and the resources you need to become a confident and skilled gun dog trainer. Let's take this journey together because no woman should have to train her gun dog alone. We'll see you all next week.